It's 10 o'clock Mountain Time every Tuesday and Thursday. That means it's time for Tom and Shane Business and Politics. And there we are together again, as always. Hey, if you're just joining us, don't forget to subscribe. Ring the notification bell. You'll always be notified when we have another podcast, no matter what time zone you're in, no matter where you are in the world. And if you'd like to support us monetarily, there's a link in the description below to do that. And we do a lot of great things for you if you do support us monetarily. There are some costs involved in putting these on. And we do these with StreamYard. If you'd like to make videos like this yourself, there's a free link in the description below to try it out. And I want to remind you that Tom and Shane both write on Medium.com. We write weekly, daily, monthly articles over there. So check it out at Medium.com. And today we're going to talk about the good, the bad, the ugly of lawyers. Shane, lawyers are the... why don't sharks bite lawyers? Professional courtesy.
That's true. We know all the jokes. You know, less than 90% of Americans will ever have use of a lawyer in a lifetime. And of the 10% that might, a broad percent, about 60% will be for a traffic incident or some type of ticket they may have gotten crosswalking, or if they want to challenge it or not. In most cases, when people are issued a ticket by the constable, they usually pay it. They know they probably broke the law, and they'll pay it. But if they feel they've been disenfranchised, then they have the right to challenge it. Mm-hmm. With the rest of it, it's a changing, ongoing status of an industry, a multi-billion-dollar global industry, actually, because it starts, of course, in England with common law and came to all of our lands. Used to be, it was primarily a male job, but now nearly 38% of the lawyers are women, and there's over 1.6 million lawyers in the United States licensed to serve. So yeah. It's a very interesting practicality. There's precedent procedure behind all of it. Of course, an education is primary, mm-hmm. and that's a requirement under the law. All states have associations. They're called, bar associations, mm-hmm. and there are federal as well, because of proceedings in federal court and all the way to the Supreme Court. But most bar associations in each state maintain some type of overview on the lawyers that are registered. They do this because unlike everybody else in our countries, lawyers aren't regulated. Zip, zero regulation. So that means people that find themselves dismayed at the manner in which a lawyer represents them, they can only go to the bar association in that state, file a complaint. That, like we're dealing with the government, takes months to years. It's really a horrific situation because no regulations. Yeah. And what do they charge you as an hourly rate? There's no regulations. So under the guise of being in a law firm or working for themselves, they tend to charge whatever they want. Now, to give you an idea, because everyone has probably heard about lawyers and what they get paid, a great example is to make $1 million a year for a lawyer at 250 would require 4,000 hours or 50 hours a week. That's most law firms. They if you're going to join a firm of any size, the minimum qualification is you have clients and the ability at least of $1 million a year. And I'm talking, that's just regional. But when you start talking about mega corporations, where their legal bills can go into the hundreds of millions of dollars, boy, it's a big time play, because of course they can charge up to $600,000. There are lawyers that have been known to charge even $2,000 an hour. Most lawyers will require you give them a retainer up front. They'll send you a bill that you can't understand, which you can't, because there's no standard regulations. And you have to try and figure out how they charge you out. It's on an hourly basis, and they'll break that hour down to 10 minutes talking on the phone. Yeah. It's a very lucrative business, and that's why a lot of people want to get into it. Now, historical, Joseph D. Jamal Jr., born October 19th, 1925, Houston, Texas. He died December 23rd, 2015, at the age of 90. Went to the University of Texas, Austin, and the University of Texas School of Law. Why am I mentioning him? Because he's been proclaimed the wealthiest practicing attorney in the United States, individual, of course. And he donned the name of King of Torts. That was his specialty, was tort law. And a tort is a civil wrong that causes a claimant or suffering. So basically, we're talking about a lawsuit. And his estimated wealth when he passed away in 2015, $1.7 billion. That's from Forbes themselves. Not bad, baby.
Not bad. Well, we can't talk about lawyers without explaining the difference between a lawyer and an attorney, Shane. A lawyer only gives advice and direction. You go to court, you've got to have an attorney. So
in Canada, they're called barristers, or in English, under English law, they're called barristers and solicitors.
Right.
And there's a good reason for this. All lawyers have to go before the bar to become a lawyer, and they take an oath, like all people in public service. And there's a specific, that they will not lie in court, and that everything that their evidence that they will present to court will be,
accurate.
Accurate and under the precedent procedures of law. So the reason this is done is so that the judge makes the assumption, which is to the disadvantage of others, that the lawyer is not lying to them. I mean, that whatever a lawyer says or an attorney says a solicitor says in court is the truth. Now, when you talk about a lawyer or a barrister, they're basically business lawyers, and, their relative job is creating and organizing public companies or private companies, and providing protection for the principle of a private company and for the shareholders of public companies, and protecting, of course, the board of directors and the officers of that public company.
Yep, that's true.
And when it comes to this situation, because of the demands they make of people for a retainer, as it's called, it becomes very harsh and very difficult. If you're looking for a lawyer and or a attorney in Washington, D.C., because you work for the government as a public in public service, and one party makes accusations of you, assuming you're involved with the other party, and they call you before Congress, either the House or the Senate, you can't go there. Yes, you could hide behind the Fifth Amendment, or you could hide behind, what the head of the FBI says, I can't discuss something that we're investigating, or, I don't know anything about that, but I run it. But if you're somebody else that's brought before a government investigation, you have to have a lawyer. Now, the only problem with that is they're very expensive, particularly, in Washington.
When you get to that level of...
That's right. Lawyers are at the state level are expensive. Lawyers at the county level or at the city level, or you're down the street, are all different, of course, because no regulation, but... This has been used now for the better part of 40 years by the Demolition Party, the Democrats, to basically try and bankrupt people out of public service. Literally, that's what their intention is. We saw a lot of this during the Trump administration. You have a congressman that had to deal with this. I mean, for basically doing nothing and just having to constantly answer to requests from Congress. Your fees can get to $250,000 to $500,000, depending on, you know, how hard they want to press. Because if you get a request from any congressman or senator within the realm of a committee or an investigation, you have to respond. Otherwise, you're found in contempt. We've seen all that with people that attempted that under Trump. So, yeah, it's a great topic. I'm glad we're talking about it because people need to understand the importance of how to deal with them.
Yeah. Well, a couple trials of the century, at least the last century anyway, O.J. Simpson, the Lindbergh baby, the Rosenbergs, all go back to the last century. And the O.J. trial was 11 months. They debated 4 hours and found him innocent of murder, despite the overwhelming forensic evidence they had against him. But what can I tell you? The guy's still in jail, as far as I know. Right. So,
well, yeah. So when I say there's no restrictions, you know, under your constitution and outlined in the Bill of Rights is a right to be provided a lawyer. Mm-hmm. That was codified, of course, by the Marshall Court back in the 1960s.
Yeah.
And with, you know, you're not having
the Miranda decision.
That's correct. And not having mm-hmm. to discuss anything if you're criminally charged or, you're mm-hmm. arrested and, you know, they haven't charged you yet, but they're trying to answer or find out why they should. Mm-hmm. but the reality of that is that the Constitution only says, that you need to be brought to court within a reasonable period of time. Mm-hmm. This, again, one regulation that the courts themselves and the Supreme Court in particular should deal with. Here's why. In every city, town, county, state, and federal, there is an office. You go to that office where they keep files, and they keep files of every case. A lot now is on computer, but they do keep paper. They do keep paper files because of the quantity of documents that are required for them to do so. But they also have a log for trial dates and times. And lawyers will very often take a client and go to the courthouse, and they will look up 10 or 12 dates, 6 months to a year from now, for that trial. So what you have is a terrible situation, unregulated, meaning just one regulation, state bars and federal, the government could pass it. You can only assign one date per trial, but lawyers are free to do it as often and as many as they want. So they fill the docket. So that's what extends the time of you having a trial. One of the ways you deal with this is go before a master and demand a court date without your lawyer. You can do it on your own. You just, go before a master in your country and mine, like one we're learning about now with the Trump situation, and say, "Master, my lawyer is expensive. I'm not here to complain about that. What I am here to complain about is his delay of my trial. It's him, and I would ask that the court order a date. I have questioned him as to how many dates he has assigned to my case, and he has admitted more than one, but he won't tell me which one it will be. So please, grant me an order that he has to, provide me a date now for my case." Yep. So that's one thing you can do.
Yep. For a civil trial, it can take up to 2 years to get a trial date from the initial filing.
That's right.
Some studies. So
that's right. And it's the lawyers of mm-hmm. Both parties that argue the date and the trial mm-hmm. back and forth on their own.
Right.
Just as they do as for what are called discoveries, where they have the right to sit in their in a place of their choosing and ask you questions. Most often it's their office, and you come there with your lawyer, and you sit down now before a recording device, and they have a right to ask you questions. Your lawyer's there to protect them because there's certain questions they don't have a right to, and lawyers will tell you have three answers: yes, no, four. Yes, no, I don't recall, or I plead the fifth. So the single best question ever asked by anybody in that situation is, you don't recall. And this is a guarded question, because now if they try to press it, your lawyer can always say, well, asked and answered, because mm-hmm. very often it's a question they've already really answered in a different way, if your lawyer's paying attention. But on the other side of it, if they ask you the question in another way, you say, well, I don't recall. But if you add to it then, but if you have some type of documentation, or tell me what it's in reference to and show me what it's in reference to, you put them on the mark. Especially about, where were you on the date? Well, I don't recall, but if you have some idea of what the date that was, but please provide me the evidence that you have. So you're better to look at it from the standpoint of putting them on their heels of providing to you what provides them the right to ask you the question they're asking you. Now, I know it sounds confusing, but this is for those people that may never, God willing, have to have it happen. But if it does, have some idea of how to protect yourself.
Yeah, I would think more than 90% of people need an attorney. I mean, you have wills, you have all sorts of things other than police.
No, I'm talking criminal. I was talking.
Yeah, yeah. I was
just saying, most people will have the use of a lawyer in their lifetime.
Yeah, either. I would say that's I would say that's
but most people in a very few people will find themselves in a criminal situation.
Yeah. There are more than 1.3 million lawyers nationwide, approximately one lawyer for every 240 people. Even so, large chunks of the country are legal deserts. Montana would be one of them, where there's few lawyers in parts of our state, and Canada, certainly, there would be plenty of legal deserts, Shane, with as big a country as you have, and 75% of the population lives within 50 miles of the border. So some of those people up in the upper Yukon are kind of out of luck. They got to go somewhere to find an attorney.
That's right. Yes. And of course, a big shift in this occurred as we're discussing, because you have, of course, two separate criminal and civil cases. Mm-hmm. Criminal cases where the state accuses you of breaking a law. A civil case is a dispute between two parties, and one party decides mm-hmm. to sue the other. They become the plaintiff, and the person they're suing become the defendant. So law has really not had a major change until, excuse me, music and copyright law. And this became very significant. And there were copyright acts formed in 1976, even though there was a massive amount of music being produced since in the previous 75 years with the advent of recording. One of the interesting aspects of Title 17 under that act is that there's a 70-year exclusion. After 70 years of the author's death or publication, the original work is now, is no longer protected. And so that there's a time limit, and it becomes what's known as the public domain. That's why you hear so many people redoing old music, because it's in the public domain. Anyone can use it. Mm-hmm. Literature's different. The copyright is similar, but you can't change that because there's other laws that have been established to protect it. So the big change came, of course, in the 90s when this whole new type of copyright came along, and it's called software copyright. And that was, of course, because of the PC. As we know, it created 35 million jobs. It changed the face of industry in the first world, particularly the United mm-hmm. States. Saved the U.S. in a faltering economy, and allowed President Clinton to start paying off the debt. So it expanded the need for specific lawyers to provide protection. Interestingly enough, the result of the PC, of course, was IBM eventually coming up in the 1990s with a supercomputer that could download all the precedent and procedure on the books in legal libraries, because that was one of the biggest charges that law firms would make on a client, was to go out and look for a precedent to use in court and say, no, you can't do this because this was already decided here in this case. Mm-hmm. Or this procedure was established by this law created, you know, by the government, mm-hmm. and so you can't do this. Well, now they don't have researchers anymore because they've got IBM computers that have indexed and covered every situation for precedent procedure. So that, you know, it can be a death knell and also not. Then along came in the 2000. Why it took this long, it's not that it wasn't an issue, but it became a big one in the 80s and 90s and then into 2000 with trademark. So because trademark overtook patents, with the advent of China being allowed in the 90s in, massive numbers of patents were being abused. So what the U.S. lawyers came up with, the Lawyers Association, with trademarks. So what they did is they went out and trademarked everything and then created new law with new precedent procedure to protect public and private companies from foreign abuse by trademark. The reason they did this is because copyright was taking so long to get to court. You know, it was like 5, 6, 7 years. It was terrible. And the company get wiped out, you know, by somebody in China producing their product cheaper. So trademarks became really significant in that they could get to court immediately and get, you know, a restraining order, which a judge can produce, any judge, master judge, federal judge, appellate judge, you know, and restrict any manufacturer from producing something that's in copyright. And if it's a foreign company, they created, you know, precedent that their products sold in the United States, any money they generated could be frozen for, you know, till the case was settled. So, you know, I'm not saying all lawyers are bad, because some of them out there have been pretty good about this stuff.
Well, in the case of Gucci, for example, their trademarks are ripped off all the time. I mean, there's all kinds of bogus products of theirs with the Gucci name on them, and you know, in some cases it takes a real expert to tell the difference between a phony and a real one. I'm going to go back to sure. Costs here, Shane, for a minute, and let people know. United States typical attorney fees range from about $100 to $400 an hour, and of course those will change with, you know, the expertise that the person has. And some attorney fees that we commonly see, I guess, tax attorneys, I'm going to read these for the benefit of the people who are listening to us and not viewing us. Highest paid lawyer salary by practice area, tax attorneys, $122,000. Corporate lawyers, 115. Employment lawyers, 87. Real estate attorneys, 86,000. Divorce attorneys, 84,000. Immigration, 84,000. Estate attorneys, 83,000. And public defenders, 63,000. So that will give you that'll give you some idea, at least of where we. Where we are with those, Shane. So
yes, well, the other thing that's forgotten in this is it's not just the hourly charges that lawyers charge you for. They charge you for copying, which, you know, they monopolize because it's a great revenue for them. They charge anywhere from $50 to $1 a page now. It used to be, you know, 20-30 years ago, is it, you know, 10 to a quarter, cents to a quarter, but now it's 50 cents to a buck. And the reason for this is that everything that they produce for a case, there needs to be 4 copies. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a copy for him, one for the judge, one from the plaintiff or defendant that they're dealing with, and then one for the files, the government files. So, you know, and I've regrettably had in business to do this, and it's astounding the tens of thousands of dollars that are spent just in printing. Mm-hmm. Then they have additional costs that they'll say they have, you know, working for them, a younger person that's not a lawyer, but they'll refer it to them. Mm-hmm. And it's one of these situations where it's an add-on. So all of a sudden now you're paying their assistant, who could be a lawyer or not necessarily, but could be a lawyer, you know, at a rate of $100 or $200, $125 or $75, you know. Well, they're doing research, or they're putting together they're binding all the documents. So, charge me for the documents, and then you charge me for someone to put it all together.
Yeah.
Oh, and then, of course, you have to deliver them.
Of course.
So that's right.
Deliver service as well.
That's right. And if you ever go to lunch with the lawyer, he'll bill you.
Yeah.
You know, he'll say, he's happy to take you to lunch because he's going to bill you for it.
Right. Anytime.
So there are a lot of add-ons. I mean, the list is very long. I don't want to spend a lot of time.
I don't either. Yeah. Well, let's move over to Chicago. Since 2010, City of Chicago has paid $2.4 million to attorneys in lawsuits against the city, accusing it of illegally withholding public records. About 90% of these involved police records, where the police would not give up the records to the attorneys.
Right. Yes. And it's horrific. We disclosed this, and we brought this forward back in 2019, folks. 2019. Wow, that's 3 years.
Yeah, we talked about it back then, even. Yeah.
Chicago. You know, why are they having this problem with all of these situations, these neighborhoods that aren't that, and all these shootings? And as the police won't go in there. Up until 2019, Chicago had settled civil rights claims by people that had been charged by the police for shooting someone or having an illegal gun, that their civil rights had been abused, and the city prosecutor wouldn't challenge them. They just plead them out and settle them. Well, the great city of Chicago, up to 2019, $757 million in settlements in the previous 25 years. The result of that, because 60% goes to the lawyers representing their clients, is three of the largest African-American legal firms in the United States are in Chicago.
Why not?
You know, by 2022, this year, it's now hit almost $900 million. Still going on. So it's one of these topics with why do we have a discussion about it? You know, and we, you know, you and I know, and we've told the people who listen to us what the problem is. But amazingly enough, lawyers, police, government, politicians, none of them want to talk about this massive amount of settlement that Chicago has paid out for these abusive or claims of abuse of people's civil rights.
Well, there's hardly an excuse for it that will hold water. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous, and I can understand why they want to sweep it under the rug. That much money, you know, the citizens are going, wait a minute, I got a pothole out in front of my house that hasn't been fixed since 1990.
Yeah, but the backside of that is the precedent they say set. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
if they plead out or settle that claim, which is a lawsuit by someone they probably charged with a crime.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to then prosecute because you settled the civil suit, you know, and you're admitting, we abused your civil rights. Well, if you abuse their civil rights and you charge them and go to court, it'll get thrown out. The judge will say, well, you've already admitted to abusing their civil rights.
Yeah.
Why have you charged this person?
Yeah.
So there's a double-edged sword to it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why the expression is there. One is civil, which is the claim of their civil rights. And then the other is criminal. You racially charged. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So criminals are going free. Well, guess who's pushed this the hardest? Well, Democrats in Democrat cities. Every city The Democrats run have the same policy, not having paid out as much, but hundreds of millions of dollars, all of them. Mm-hmm. From Detroit to Baltimore, L.A. to every major city in your country run by Democrats. They've used the same process to stop prosecuting and paying out homies. I mean, how are you doing today, homie? I just picked up 2.5. Well, I got 3.5 6 months ago. Oh, wow. It's not good. It's a topic not being discussed. Nobody in the media wants to talk about it. Yeah. And it's the greed and corruption of both the legal, meaning the courts, and the lawyers and the public lawyers, the prosecutors, going along with this, because no lawyers going to make that kind of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, and ain't going to flow somewhere else. I mean, it doesn't just flow to their wallet,
Yeah, that's for sure. So, well, some final thoughts, maybe. Attorneys, love them or hate them, we sooner or later, you're probably going to need one for something, some kind of paperwork, some kind of a will, a document, a deed, who knows what, Shane, but we're probably going to need one. So.
All right. Well, my final thoughts is, and I've saved it for the end. Okay, here it is, folks. In both our constitutions, you have the right of representing yourself. You don't need a lawyer. Okay. So in any issue, in any situation where you make that decision and you find yourself before a court, I don't care, federal, state, local, county, master, judge, appellate judge, Supreme Court, whatever it might be, the first thing that you do is you walk up to your podium on your side and you ask to be sworn in. And then if the judge questions you, you say, well, now I demand to be sworn in. And if the judge questions you and you say, you're not an advocate of this court, you have no right to ask that question. And we'll briefly get into advocacy in a minute and say, I'd like to be sworn in. And please have the clerk do so. Now, swear yourself in and have the oath of the lawyer in that bar, in that state. Get the oath that they take and you got them. Now you're swearing yourself in as a lawyer, representing yourself, okay? Read the oath, swear yourself in, thank the clerk and look at the judge and say, now we're on equal footing. You cannot assume anything that I say is anything but the truth, as you do with this counsel here. And as an advocate of the court, or under the rules of advocacy of the court, you cannot advise me. You have no right as a judge to advise me in any way. That is not part of your job. Two important things if you want to defend yourself. Don't forget them. It's worked for me.
Yeah. Well, and don't forget, if you defend yourself, you have a fool for a client.
Now, that's why lawyers and judges and the entire system came up with that, was to scare people away from doing it. That's right. It worked very well in the first 100 years of your country. Most people, because there were no lawyers, represented themselves. Yeah. And that's why the founding fathers put that incredible right in the Bill of Rights of, you can't incriminate yourself. So you have the right to plead the Fifth Amendment, And remember those important words. Yes, no, don't recall. I plead the Fifth.
All right. Hey, I need to remind you, the award-winning Tom and Shane, we're live on radio every Saturday, 8 to 11 a.m. Mountain Time. Listen live at KMMSAM.com, KMMSAM.com. Click listen now. Nothing to join, no signups, no email needed, no personal information. All you do is click and listen. And if you missed any of our past shows, they're also all at KMMSAM.com. Click Tom and Shane's podcast, and you'll be taken over to that for both our video and our radio show are all there, and we are approaching 10,000 downloads of our show. So pretty impressive. So we
and Tom you. Wasn't meaning that personally to call you all fools, by the way.
No, that's
and, you know,
true.
Look, the bottom line is that the only thing lawyers do for 8 years is read books, read the law, take courses to remember certain precedents and procedure, be tested on it. With the 21st century and the internet, you can learn the law, literally learn the
pretty
law
good.
In 6 months. If you spent 2 to 3 hours a day reading, referencing and going through the rules of court procedure or the rules or guidelines, you can set up a public company. You don't need to pay $500 or $1,000 to a lawyer to do it. You can do it online, for $600 and $500 of registration with the city, state, or whoever you have to register with to set up the company or the corporation. So, nobody's a fool based on the 21st century, quite honestly. You're a fool if you go to a lawyer first without doing the research yourself.
Well, at least do the research yourself, but it doesn't hurt to get advice.
Well, the first another lesson that's important is that if you do go into a lawyer's to discuss it with him, prior to requesting a retainer, your first meeting with a lawyer is always free.
Yes.
So you can go in with as many questions as you want.
Yeah.
And he cannot refuse to answer. So and he can't charge you anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great way to have a conversation with the individual to see if you get along personally. And and if the person has a disparaging attitude or thinks he's above you, or you can get as many questions in as you can. Won't have to ask the next lawyer that unless you disagree with him. And we're trying to lay out some benefits for you for your future, especially younger people, because this whole thing, the legal system, it's there to scare you. Don't be scared of it. There's nothing scary here. Just a bunch of books. Dust them off. Read them.
That's all it is.
Go online.
Well, just remember that 75% of all attorneys finished in the bottom three quarters of their class. So if that's who you want representing you, then be my guest. So, all right. That's going to wrap it up for us. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We really appreciate you being here with us. And we will see you next Thursday, this coming Thursday, with yet another informative podcast. So till then, we are thanking you very much for watching, and we'll be back.